Welcome back. My name is Ray Stevens, and I will be taking you through stage 7 of our walk, which includes High Street, the Museum Quarter, and the River Hull. As you can probably tell by my accent, I'm not from Hull like my colleagues. However, I am no less passionate about our city and its history. So let's start. You should now be standing in High Street on the pavement opposite the black and white frontage of Ye Olde Black Boy. It was first licensed in 1729 and is Hull's oldest surviving pub. It was also one of the favourite haunts of the poet Philip Larkin. If you will now carry on walking, and next to the pub is the other entrance to Burn Avenue mentioned in Stage 6. Although it has the grand name of Avenue, it was in fact an alley arranged in an L shape between Scow Lane and here. It shows how commercial buildings were developed in Hull during the early part of the 19th century. We will see another example of this later on in this stage. If you now look up to your right, there is a sign Bond 31, and underneath is Bond 31 Staith. Staith is a landing place for cargo. The merchants who lived in High Street built their warehouses between their homes and the River Hull, and these lanes ran between the warehouses and down to the river, where goods were loaded and unloaded. Staith can be spelt with or without a final E, and you will find both spellings used around Hull's old streets. Moving further along, and on the other side of the street, we come to Dunswell Forge. This is a medieval building rebuilt in the 17th century as a shipsmith's. However, I'm pleased to be able to say that much of the original internal structure remains. It is now a popular vegetarian restaurant with its entrance just around the corner in Bishop Lane. Opposite where you are standing, there is another staith. On the wall to the left of the entrance is a plaque about Crawl House. Read the information on the plaque and go down the staith, and you will come to the facade of Crawl House on your left. In 1664, the wealthy merchant George Crawl decided to give his house a new entrance that echoed the porch of Wilberforce House, which we will see later in the stage. Unfortunately, the facade of Crawl House is all that remains of one of the oldest buildings in Hull. Now return to High Street and turn right, and walk along until you come to the building on your right, just before the Red Post Box. This was the former Pacific Club, built in 1899, and was the meeting place for Hull's corn and seed merchants. The style is Jacobean Revival, and there is a wealth of detail to be seen. It is now occupied by Hull Culture and Leisure, as well as the Office for Hay Volunteering, a legacy of Hull's City of Culture year in 2017. Now on the same side, just after the post box, we have the entrance to Bishop Lane Staith. This shows how a typical staith entrance would have been in the mid-18th century. It has excellent examples of the heavy wrought iron protective plates that were probably put there by the property owners to stop carts from damaging the walls of their buildings as traders manhandled their goods to the quayside. Go on, rub them and give them a tap. Just imagine who has passed down this staith before you.
For you.
So if you could now carry on walking and stay on the right-hand side pavement, you will see a range of warehouses from the early 1800s. If you look up, some still have the second and third floor loading bays intact. These now have been converted into student accommodation. On the other side of the street is another avenue that isn't. A rather over-elaborate commercial property built in around 1900. It replaced the previous L-shaped alley. Next to it is 156 High Street, Salter's Court, named after the 19th century sloop owner John Salter. The entrance is gated, but if it is open, take a quick look down in the beautifully set out courtyard. Moving along, and again on the other side of the street, you come to the Sailmaker's Arms. It has a warm, glowing open fire in the winter and a large sun-catching front courtyard in the summer. In the 19th century, it was a ship's chandler, a merchant for ship supplies. So now back on your side of the street, we have the very grand former Corn Exchange, designed by Bellamy and Hardy's in 1855. We know this because they conveniently embossed their name and the date across the centre rail of these rather fine entrance gates. The Corn Exchange now houses the Hull and East Riding Museum. We can see the entrance just around the next corner. On the other side of the street is Maister House, Hull's only National Trust property. It was rebuilt in 1775 by the wealthy local merchant Henry Maister after a fire destroyed most of the original building. Although it seems quite austere on the outside, the inside reveals a delicate wrought iron balustrade to the stairs and gallery with ornate plasterwork. The premises are currently occupied by Hull's Eclectic Orchestra. It is usually closed, but check the inside door, as they sometimes post a notice in the summer indicating when the public can enter and look around. In contrast to Maister House, next door to it we have the very elaborate Phoenix Chamber, 161 High Street. It was built in the 19th century and it is still used as it was originally intended, as office accommodation. Phoenix House is on the corner with Chapel Lane, and opposite, on your side of the street, is Chapel Lane Staithe and the entrance to two of Hull's excellent museums, the Street Life Museum and the Hull and East Riding Museum, as well as the Peace Garden. Both museums, like all of them in Hull, are free and well worth a visit. Just before we move on, please have a look down Chapel Lane opposite. Walk down about 10 metres. It is thought that the cobbles you can see were laid in the 18th century, at the same time as the Queen's Dock was being built. If you look carefully, you will see on either side where ridges were worn in the cobbles, probably caused by carriages and carts as they made their way down the lane. You may wish to stop the guide here to take a closer look. So please, would you now continue to walk down High Street, past the cafe on your left, until you come to Gandhi Way. Just before you cross over Gandhi Way, look to your right and you will see Oriel Chambers. This is a Grade II listed brick building built in 1879. It takes its name from the oriel window that stands proud of the facade. The building is now part of the University of Hull and houses the Wilberforce Institute for Emancipation and Slavery. Very appropriate being so close to William Wilberforce's birthplace, of whom you will learn more about next. I'm sure he would have been delighted to know that his work continues in Hull. Now cross over Gandhi Way, past the entrance to the Street Life Museum on your right, but be careful and to look out for traffic here, as it can come from both directions, and pretty quickly at that. Once over Gandhi Way, stop at the horse trough on the corner, look to your right, and here is Wilberforce House, the birthplace of William Wilberforce. The house was probably built in the 1660s and was originally the official residence of the Governor of Hull. It was bought by the Wilberforce family in 1730, and it stayed in the family until 1832. It opened as a museum in 1906, making it Hull's oldest museum. In 2023, its work was recognised in the Museum Association's National Decolonising Museum Awards and won the category for Changing Lives. William Wilberforce is probably Hull's most renowned son. He was born upstairs in his house in 1759 and became a Member of Parliament in 1780. It was he who led a group of MPs to push for the abolition of the slave trade. Although he was a small man, only 5'3" tall, he was a great orator. During his final address to Parliament, before the vote, it is said many MPs were reduced to tears. Let's hear what he had to say in Parliament that day.
The slave trade, founded in inequity and carried on as this was, must be abolished. Let the policy be what it might, let the consequences be what they would. I am from this time determined that I would never rest until I have effected its abolition.
It was his efforts that finally led to the Slave Trade Act 1807, which ended Britain's involvement in the international slave trade. He died just 3 days after the Slavery Abolition Act, which was passed in 1833. He is buried in Westminster Abbey. Just after Wilberforce House, on the same side, you will come to a pair of Georgian houses. They were built in 1756 for the town merchant James Hamilton. What makes these houses so different is that they are actually a pair, similar to a modern-day semi-detached house, which was very unusual for the Georgian period. There are very few examples of this layout from the Georgian period left in this country today. The two houses have been combined into a museum, with rooms displaying costumes, firearms, displays of Hull silver from the 17th and 18th centuries, and clocks made in Hull and the East Riding. You can access the houses through Wilberforce House. So now continue along High Street until you come to a wall on your right. The wall you see used to be part of a complete row of elegant Georgian houses, which were sadly mostly destroyed, including the other side of High Street, during the Second World War. If you look through a gap in the wall, you will get a view of Peace Warehouses, built in 1745 and extended in 1760. Although they now have been converted into apartments, they have retained many of the original external features. Joseph Peace was a Dutch merchant who established Hull's first bank in 1754, which eventually became a branch of the Bank of England. He is thought to have been the first bank in Yorkshire, and only one of 12 in the country at that time. At the very end of the wall, high up, you can see a blue plaque dedicated to Joseph Peace. Now keep walking until you reach the main road ahead. This is Alfred Gelder Street. Once there, please wait for a few moments. Alfred Gelder Street was built around 1900 and cut across High Street, isolating the northern end of the street, which is where we are now making for. It was part of the main road network through the city until the Castle Street A63 development was completed in the early 60s. Now before we cross over, please look to your right and you will see Drypool Bridge. On the top of the fascia, you will notice an artwork of interlocking rings. Well, for those mathematicians amongst you, these are a depiction of the Venn diagrams. Why Venn diagrams, I hear you cry? Well, on the other side of the bridge is the district of Drypool. It was there in 1834 the famous mathematician John Fenn was born, he of the Venn diagram fame. The diagram is still widely used today, and not just by mathematicians. So now we cross over Alfred Gelder Street. It can still be quite busy around here. And unfortunately, there's no designated crossing point. So please pause the guide at this point and restart again when you are on the other side of Alfred Gelder Street. You should now be at the entrance of what is known locally as Little High Street. Please walk down about 25 metres, keeping to the left-hand pavement. Once there, pause for a few moments. In front of you, on the other side of High Street, you will be able to see Blades House. It was built around 1750 for Benjamin Blades, a merchant and shipbuilder. If you look up to the roof line, you will see, between two chimneys, a small window. Originally, young boys were sent up on the roof to look out for ships sailing up the Humber so that cargoes could be got ready for loading. By being prepared like this, ships could be offloaded and loaded within the hour so that they could be sent back out on the same tide. How's that for 18th century just-in-time management? As you look at the window, it is pretty clear it was an afterthought. It is hearsay that it was added after three boys were killed falling off the roof whilst ship spotting. Who knows the truth? Please now continue along High Street, staying on the left-hand side. The name of Benjamin Blades would probably have slipped into obscurity had it not been for the fact that in 1784 his company built the ship Berthier here on the River Hull. It was later bought by the Royal Navy for the princely sum of £1,950. They renamed it the Bounty, and the rest, as they say, is history. Blades House is currently used by the University of Hull as, appropriately enough, their Maritime History Research Centre. As you continue walking, you will pass Alexandria Dock on your right, and on your left is Haworth House, built in 1887 for the National Works. Again to your right is a group of rather undistinguished Georgian terraced houses. At number one, that's the last one you come to, Sir Samuel Standage was born. He had the dubious privilege of being recognised as the founding father of Hull's whaling trade. He became very wealthy and was knighted for his troubles. He owned a fleet of whalers and was a master mariner. Emphasising the importance of the whaling trade to the city, Standage became Hull's mayor in 1795. He was also five times warden of Hull Trinity House, which part financed Captain James Cook's famous exploratory voyages. Continuing on, you will come to the very distinguished former dock office on your right. Built around 1820, the dock office was the headquarters of the Hull Dock Company until the new dock offices, now the Maritime Museum, was opened in 1871. Now please cross over to the pavement opposite the dock office. Although it's pretty quiet around here, make sure you still watch out for traffic. Once there, take a look at the building. You will notice that there were originally five bay windows set around the front entrance with a central triangular pediment. Well, it can't have been big enough, because in 1840, three more bays were added to the right-hand side to give us the building we can see today. Now moving slightly further along, past the old dock offices, look towards the River Hull, and you might be able to see that there is a lot of activity taking place behind the illustrated panels installed there. Here was the original lockpit for Queen's Dock, which is now, of course, Queen's Gardens. This will eventually be the new home of Hull's historic trawler, the Arctic Corsair, which is being very carefully and fully restored. There will also be a purpose-built, environmentally friendly visitor centre. But now look up at the north wall of the old dock offices, and you will see why it was built where it is. Every ship that entered or left the dock could be watched over by the dock owners. If you are interested, take the opportunity and cross over the road and read what is on the panels. A very exciting development as one part of the multi-million pound project Hull, Yorkshire's Maritime City. Okay, so now we will make our way back to Alfred Gelder Street. As you walk, glance to your right and you will notice a cul-de-sac called North Wall. This was, as the name suggests, the northern outer limit of the old town wall. Whilst we walk back to Alfred Gelder Street, I'd like to tell you about a couple of Hull's more distinguished former citizens. I mentioned earlier that John Venn was born in Drypool. Well, further east, down what is Holderness Road, in 1888, J. Arthur Rank, the film mogul, was born. There's a museum at 371 Holderness Road celebrating his achievements. And even further east, but still in Hull, is the birthplace of Mick Ronson, the lead guitarist with the Spiders from Mars. They were the support group for David Bowie throughout the 70s, and Bowie acknowledged that Mick was a great influence on his career. Sadly, Mick died of cancer in 1993. You can hear David Bowie's feelings towards Mick on the YouTube link in the Want to Know More section of our website. Well, as you arrive again at Alfred Gelder Street, you will have reached the end of Stage 7. I hope you've enjoyed this very historic section of Hull. It is here that Stage 8 commences, so whatever you decide to do, when ready to start the walk again, come back here to the corner of Salthouse Lane. Press Stage 8, which is Alfred Gelder Street, to ye olde White Hart. My colleague will then be your guide. Goodbye.